Okay, everybody, we have a speaker tonight. I've known this gentleman since 1990. We ran against each other for the Board of Trustees, and I thanked God when he won and I didn't. And so it was really, it was he was a great trustee. He has a very interesting story. We're very much alike, and it's my pleasure to introduce Mike Kay from Colorado, who will now tell us his experience, strength, and hope, and what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Mike, it's all yours.
Thanks so much, Joe. Hello, everybody. My name is Mike Koechner. I'm an abstaining, maintaining, compulsive overeater from Denver, Colorado. And what Joe didn't say was when we ran against one another at the World Service Business Conference, it took three ballots before one of us got elected. And it was just kind of like, oh, good God. And my prayer was, look, God, if you want me in this, fine. If you don't, fine. Just get it over with. So that's what happens. It was, and that was, those were the days when a lot of folks would choose to run for trustee. Anyway, I'll get to that later. The what it was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I'm just going to give the Reader's Digest condensed version of my story in this aspect. I come from a good German, Irish, Roman Catholic, Kansas farm type family. My dad's business was delivering gasoline to farmers and small business people in the area. He purchased the business from my maternal grandfather. I'm one of seven children. I'm the second son in the family. I have five brothers and a sister, and my eldest brother had cerebral palsy, and so I was the second child. And so I always said that I have so many traits of the eldest child with all of the insecurities of the second child, and therefore am a therapist's dream client because I'm such a mess. The one thing about all of this was I went to a public school taught by nuns for 8 years. Don't ask me how they ever did it. I went to public high school and went to a public college. The high school that I attended, the first 3 years, there were only 60 of us in the entire high school. And I jokingly say, at that time, there were every school has its little different kids. They've got, you've got your fat kids and you've got your gay kids, you've got your theater kids, you've got these kids, this kid. Our school was so small, I fell into three categories: the theater, fat, gay kid. That's just the way it was. And yet at the same time, I was preened for the priesthood. I mean, it was just a whole, it was a whole mess. So I looked at, I just recently got some pictures from my brother, because he was the executor of my dad's estate. And I got pictures of me as I was growing up, and I wasn't a fat kid until about the third or the third grade. And at that time I was 110 pounds, and third graders aren't that tall. And so from grades 3 through 12, I gained 15 and a half pounds each year. I went past the husky stage into getting clothes from basically the men's section because that's all the things that fit. I'm not going to go into a great deal of detail what it was like because those of us who know, we all know what it's like to be obese and to have our thighs rubbed together and the pants, the pants fall apart, and you have to take care of that, and just that miserable, horrible outlook. I can remember looking in the mirror when I was a teen, holding the corpulence of my stomach, just going, God, if I could just cut this off. It was just absolutely horrible. And so I didn't do, I never tried to lose weight because mom was my guinea pig. Mom was the one who, she always had the battle of the bulge as well. And she tried everything. She tried Weight Watchers. She tried Tops. She tried the egg and grapefruit diet. And she got the shots from the diet pills, the shots, and all that other stuff. And I was just going, no, if it's not working for mom, it's not going to work for me. Well, in 1970, 74, mom went to OA because she read about it in the newspaper. And when I came home for the summers and stuff, the more I saw of her, the less I saw of her, because she was getting rid of the weight. And there were still so many teenagers in the household. She ate a lot of lettuce and she was less bitchy, you know, about that. And it was absolutely amazing to me. And she was in OA until she died in 2000. So the thing of it was, when I went back to go do my student teaching in 1976, I had shed a great deal of weight while I was in college. I didn't have a phone. I could only go through the line once in the dorm. You know, most folks had the freshman 15 that they gain. Well, I had the freshman 30 that I got rid of. I actually lost weight. One of the things that was really horrible was I had to take PE classes. So the first semester when I was so heavy, the PE class I took was volleyball and soccer. And here it was, I was playing soccer with all of these live soccer players. And I was just mortified, just mortified. And anyway, I got through all of that. One of the things that you all have to realize is I've never been drunk. I've never used drugs and I don't use pot or anything like that. And it's not because I'm holy or virtuous by any stretch of the imagination. The reason I didn't do it was because I was always afraid that if I would get drunk or get high and put the moves on the guys that I knew, I could have either been got the snot pounded out of me or killed. So it was more a defense mechanism than anything else. However, I found relief in the food. Folks, if it's sugar-based, then I'm in love with it. You know, cookies, cakes, pies, candy, anything like that. The really sad part was I once ate moldy fruitcake under the auspices of I could use the penicillin. Now, for those of you who just don't quite understand that, my first degree is in biology education. And I know that there's enough mold in there to choke a horse, but that didn't stop me. I think the most important thing with this is I kind of knew in college that I had a problem. And then when I went back to go do my student teaching, I went to my first OA meeting with my mom. It was on Thursday night at the Roland Park United Methodist Church in Kansas. And so I went to my first OA meeting. I was 22 years old, and I just knew that I had found folks who understood what I was talking about. So I asked mom if I could go with her to the meeting the next week, and she said, no, go find your own meeting. So I did whatever any other compulsive overeater would do. I ate. So I say that I joined OA on August the 6th of 1976. And I have been a member since. I have averaged at least one OA meeting in the 46 years, 1 month and 22 days I've been in this program. And by God's grace, on August the 5th of 1979, I finally got abstinent. And I'll tell about that story in a second. But that's been for like 43 years, 23 days. The three months and 23 days. So not that I'm counting or anything, but that's by God's grace. So, you know, the physical, emotional, and spiritual parts of this disease are just devastating, especially the physical part where, you know, as we all know, Thanksgiving was this past week, and it was amateur day for some folks, you know, because that's what the amateurs do, and we used to eat that way all the time. Or some of us did. And I was just very grateful because I didn't have to this year. One of the things that I found with all of this was that I needed to stop. I needed to abstain. But see, I don't define abstinence just with the food. I define abstinence at the emotional, physical, and spiritual levels. I've got to have abstinence with all of that. Working the steps. Now, I've been screaming lately. I tell people, quit working the steps and live the steps, because it's called the 12-step way of life, not the 12-step way of work, you know? And that's one of the things that I think is so important. One of the things that is really crazy is when I first came into the program, they had the two sheets, you know, gray sheet and orange sheet. And I refused to go on gray sheet because I didn't think I could survive without the bread and all that other stuff. And besides, Twinkies weren't listed on either one of them. And I thought, well, hell, let's just go with orange sheet. And I remember the peace that came about when I was not eating compulsively, even before I got rid of the weight. I don't say that I have lost this weight, because my top weight was 232 pounds. And I remember that only because a doctor weighed me before my college physical. And I'm sure it was higher, but I had mowed a lawn back in Kansas that day, and I'm sure I shed some water weight. But still, I just could not grasp that. And people would always say, well, you really don't look that big. But, you know, it's kind of like that. What? He's such a nice looking kid. If he just lose weight, you know, I'm sure so many of us have heard that as well. One of the things about the physical aspect is at times I still have the body dysmorphia. I've been at this normal body size for over four decades, probably 42 years. And at times I still don't think I'm, quote, thin enough yet. I it's just one of those crazy, silly things, but I have to go, my clothes still fit after all these years, and I have nothing to complain about that. The stuff with the food is, I had to find out what my alcoholic and narcotic foods were, and I already knew what they were. And so, by God's grace, I haven't had to mess with those in decades. And just, but in 1979, I willingly went back to the food in January of 79, and for 8 months, folks, I suffered, and I hope I never have to go through that again. Those were the worst 8 months. I started out, and I got exceptionally ill from eating, going back to the sugar and stuff. That's just me. And so, my favorite, there are two favorite stories I like to tell about myself during that period. There was this one certain cookie that I really liked, and I had a roommate at the time, so I ate the cookie. And ate his cookies, went back and bought two packages of the cookies, one package, and I ate down to where the level was before, as you know, maybe some of you did. And then what I also did, I took these cookies out to the dumpster, and I put the cookies down, and this was in the middle of the day, for God's sakes, folks, and I got the cookies, and I jumped up and down on the box of cookies just to kill the little mothers, just to get them out of my life. So I picked them up, and I was just going, I know what these taste like whole. I wonder what they taste like smooshed. Well, by God's grace, they were able to get tossed in the dumpster. But some of us have to do wild things to get rid of this stuff. And then another time I was on my way to back from a meeting in central Kansas with this organization I was with. I stopped by in Topeka, Kansas, dropped a gentleman off who had gone with me. And I stopped by the Dunkin' Donuts, and I got 3 dozen donuts, 2 dozen of this kind and 2 dozen of and a dozen of the other kind. So I told the clerk, and I said, it's for my church group. Well, little did he know, my car was the church, I was the pastor, and I was the congregation. And between Topeka, Kansas, and Lawrence, Kansas, which is only a 20-mile drive, I didn't get miles per gallon. I got donuts per mile. And I ate between 26 and 29 donuts in that short period of time. Got a little icky, so I threw the rest of them out on the interstate. Now, the thing of it is, I've been back to Kansas twice in this past year, 3 times actually. And every time I drive by that section, I can feel those donut bodies waiting for me. They're just going, oh, Michael, I'm here. And I just go, oh, good God. The thing about the emotional aspect of this disease is that I was a mess, M-E-S-S. I was mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and sexually a mess. I needed a great deal of assistance, but I don't know about you guys, but I never ask for help. And so dealing with the emotional part of the obesity was just awful as well. And of course, being raised that good German Irish Roman Catholic, I had religion out the wazoo, but I didn't have God at all. I didn't know about that. The things that I can tell you that have happened since I've been in this program are absolutely miraculous more than anything else. By God's grace, I either weigh at or less than what my driver's license says. And I don't know how many people of you have kind of fudged your weight on your driver's license, but I weigh less than what the driver's license says. I've been to college twice. One of the things in this program, I got the guts, and somehow by God's grace, I got the guts, moved from Kansas to Colorado, met the lust of my life, and moved of all places to another bastion of liberality, Salt Lake City, Utah, where I attended LDS Business College while living with my boyfriend near the temple, which was really interesting. And he was an alcoholic, and I split the sheets because I loved myself enough to leave. And I went back to my old university, and I earned my degree, finished earning my degree in accounting. It was while I was at Emporia State University. One of the ways I put myself through school twice, the first in my first degree that I graduated with in 76, and the second degree in 87, was I lived in a funeral home. And it's a good, interesting way to start a conversation. Oh, what did you do in college? Well, I worked for a funeral home. So back in 1987, I was on call that particular night, and I got the call. We had pagers at that time. So the pager went off, and I answered, and they said, meet me at the funeral home, and we'll go over together. So we went to the deceased's home, and this was Kansas in late October. And it's always windy in that section of the state. But this woman had a carport, and the carport was swept, no leaves or anything. Walked into the house, and it was immaculate. She had tchotchkes all over the wall, but they were all dusted. And I go into the bedroom, and the funeral director is about my size. And I go into the bedroom, and her hair was coiffed, her nails were done. She smelled of powder like she had just gotten out of the shower. And she was between 350 and 400 pounds. And when I saw that, my first thought was not about the deceased. It was kind of like, oh my God, I'm going to get a hernia. So I turned to the funeral director and I said, how do we do this? And he says, go out and get the tarpaulin. So I went out to the first call card. I got the tarpaulin, and with the family in there, what we did was we rolled her over on her side. We rolled the tarpaulin down. We rolled her back on the tarpaulin. We drug her across the bed. And as lovingly and as kindly and as gently, we picked her up, put her on the gurney, strapped her to the gurney. And for those of you who are familiar with medical stuff, picking her up and hear that click, the click to make sure that everything's done, and took her out to the to the first call car, took her to the and then took her to the funeral home. I went to my OA meeting that night, and I wept and I wept and I wept because, folks, this woman, there was an OA meeting at the town, and she didn't find OA, and she died due to this disease. I saw the manifestation of my disease in front of me, and it and that and I want you to know that still haunts me to this day. It still haunts me to this day. And I'm very grateful that by God's grace, I didn't have to eat over that. Some other wild things that I've done in my life. I sat for the CPA exam 9 times and never passed a part. And guess what? Never ate over it either. However, I knew that at one time that the exam was difficult because this gal, we could take food into the exam. I never did. And she had this huge bag of pretzels, and I knew the exam was hard. What she did, she put her head down, she opened up the bag and just started stuffing her face. And I was just going, oh, thank God, I don't have to do that. I don't have to do that. The other aspect of this is I made formal application for the priesthood. And I'll be honest, I didn't lie about the whole process. I told him the truth. So a couple of years after I had been denied the priesthood, I was at a, I wanted to be with my peeps, you know? So I went to one of the gay bars in Kansas City where I was living at the time, and I was getting ready to leave. I didn't mind the drinking. It was a cigarette smoke that drove me crazy. So as I was leaving the cigarette, as I was leaving the bar, who should walk in but the archdiocesan vocational director who told me no for the seminary. And it was absolutely amazing. Remember those cartoons where the jaw dropped and the tongue waved and the eyes were out to hear? That's what that man looked like. And rather than saying anything, he just, and I said, well, hi, Bob, how are you? And his first words weren't hi, Mike, or anything like that. It was kind of like, why didn't you ever call me? And I just said, well, Bob, we know the answer. And that it was a short conversation. And so I left. Now, I wish to tell you that prior to that, when I saw him, I was really mad. I was irritated. And that was at that time that the WWJD bracelets were out, you know. And I was just going, all right, God, what would you do? And it was kind of like, you treat him with kindness and courtesy. That's what I did. And the other part of it is I did not call the archbishop and tattle on him. I didn't do anything like that, because if I did that, what good would that do? You know, anonymity. He had his own demons to deal with. I had mine. I just figured that's his problem, not mine. And what would that say about my spiritual growth if I had to, quote, tattle on somebody? I just couldn't do that. There are so many wonderful things that I have gained by living this 12-step, 12-tradition, and 12-concept way of life. You know, I know I admitted I'm powerless over food, that my life is unmanageable. Got that one down. And I know what all this stuff is. We know the steps. My big thing is I attempt to live in step 6 and 7 on a daily basis. You know, step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And step 7, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. I look at this. I look at the 12 steps on a linear basis. And if you look, step 6 and 7 are right there. And I call those the fulcrum steps. If I'm living in balance with step 6 and 7, then I don't have to worry about a whole lot of stuff. If one of those get out of balance, then I'm irritable, restless, irritable, and discontent. So I try to keep on that. And the other thing of it is, I also believe that the things that I deal with on a daily basis is what I lovingly call PAGLs: pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, and sloth. But when I live in step 6 and 7, I don't worry so much about the pride, because I can have humility. With the anger, I can have serenity. With the greed, I can have generosity. With the gluttony, I can have abstinence. With the lust, I can have love. With the envy, I can have compassion. And with the sloth, I can be active on the physical, emotional, and spiritual levels. That's what's important for me. I think the other part of it is that I wish to share with you, each of us, every single day, is given the gift of grace. G-R-A-C-E, grace. And for me, grace is very simply, graciously and gratefully receiving abstinence from compulsive eating. It's just a wonderful thing. I'm given that grace every day. And each of us are given that grace every day. So how we use it is how I trust my higher power and how we trust our higher power. You know, the other part that's most important with all of this is, there were many times that I wanted to quit. So many times I wanted to quit OA. But here's the thing. When I was first in OA, I lived about 20 miles, 15, 20 miles from the OA meeting that I attended on a weekly basis. And they needed somebody to take the literature and the coffee pot, because at that time our meetings were an hour and a half long. We had the literature and we had a coffee pot and all that. And so 3 months into program, they needed somebody to do that. So I took it because we couldn't leave the stuff at the fire station. Every time that I didn't want to go, I had to go to the meeting because I had all the stuff for the meeting. And that is what got me there. And in other meetings, I was the one who was the key carrier. If I didn't show up, there wasn't going to be a meeting. You know, that's one of the things that I found all those years ago that was so important. So what is it that keeps me coming back after all these years? Well, I think in all honesty, folks, fear is a very big part of this because I don't want to go back to where I was. I never, ever, ever, ever want to go back to that again. And I have a feeling that if I ever went back to that, you'd never see me again. Fear is one of the good things that keeps me here. And what keeps me also here is the fact that I know that I don't have to live that way again. I don't have to. I've had many, many disappointments in life as well as many great things that have happened to me. You know, I can live through the disappointments just fine. But it's the good stuff that I have trouble dealing with. You know, it's kind of like weddings and all that other stuff. It's just kind of like everybody's always trying to feed you. One of the things I can remember when my maternal grandmother died, I can remember I can remember the food that was at the funeral. And just recently, I had a brother who died in August due to complications of colorectal cancer. And then a month to the day later, in September, my sister-in-law died as she was on the way. She had a massive coronary as she was in the elevator on the way to the cardiac cath lab, and they couldn't resuscitate her. And I just sat there going, holy cow. But at the same time, I know that they weren't healthy. They were both obese and stuff. Obesity and alcoholism run in my family. And they don't know. You ever notice, for those of you who've been around for a long, long time, you ever notice that the family doesn't quite know what to do with you, even after all these years, when it comes time for dinner and stuff, they go, oh, and my sister-in-law will say, well, Mike can't eat that. Well, I feel like saying, oh, honey, I could eat it, but you don't have enough of it. And I don't know about you all, but funerals are just a food fest, a food orgy more than anything else. And I've come to realize that they bring all the food in, especially in the Midwest, they bring all the food in so that you don't have to feel. Here, let us feed you so you don't have to feel this pain, this grief and all that. And I just go, no way, no way. So what is it that keeps me on that spiritual path? It's because I'm abstaining. It's because I'm trying to remain open to what God's will is for me. And here's one of the things that I've done before. I said, I know what God's will is for every single one of you here this evening. I know it. I can tell you that. And some people go, well, that's kind of a precocious statement. But once you hear it, I don't think you'll disagree with me. God's will for each of us in this particular 12-step program is to abstain from compulsive overeating or compulsive food behaviors or compulsion with the food. And that's it. No more, no less. Just to stay clean of the compulsion. And yet at the same time, step three was really difficult for me because as some stuff says, I was agnostic as to application. I had a belief in God, but didn't believe that God would actually take the compulsion from me. Here's a fascinating thing that I for many years that I never shared what I would speak at or anything. I felt the compulsion leave from me. It was in 1980, February of 1980. I was working for a major retail distributor, and I was entering in Christmas returns. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, ding! I was working this really weird shift, 10:30 a.m. to 2 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. And I was ready. Ding, the compulsion hit. And I wanted those donut gems so damn bad, folks. I could taste them. I could Easton. And I knew this place was at 56 acres under one roof. And I knew that if I did that, I could no longer blame God. I couldn't blame my sponsor. I couldn't blame my parents. Couldn't blame the church. Couldn't blame OA. The responsibility was mine. And I knew if I went back to it, I was the one who was responsible. And it was at that point that I literally felt that lift from my system. It was gone. It was lifted from me. And for a long time, I never talked about it because I'm kind of a whacktoid anyway. And you go around telling everybody, well, this compulsion was lifted from me. They just go, yeah, right. You know, but it was. And that compulsion has never, only once, has a compulsion ever come back to me. And that's when Mom died. And I went to, my brother and I went down to go make arrangements with the priest for the readings and stuff. And I came back. Prior to leaving, somebody had brought 2 dozen donuts. And I was just going, thank you very much, God. I came back and those donuts had multiplied into 4 dozen donuts. And I was just going, oh, good God. And God and I had a discussion. And you know what? I didn't eat them by God's grace. The other thing about I love about our program is OA has its own 12 and 12. And I love what it says in step 11. What do we say? How do we pray? What do we say when we pray to our higher power? We say whatever we want. Well, I'll just have you all know that I follow that really well. My prayers will never be found in any prayer book because some people would think they're a little salty. Some people would think they're a little too earthy. Some people would think they're heretical, but I just call them honest because I just say exactly what I need to say. And I feel that with me. The most important thing that I find is no matter how rough life gets, folks, get your butt to a meeting. I don't care how rotten things are going for you, folks. If I did not have this program, I would be dead. See, I lovingly tell folks, this is how, for me, the program works. I put the stupid-ass fork down. I get my butt to a meeting. I call my sponsor. I read the big book. I read the OA 12 and 12. I give service, and I pray like hell. And if none of that works, I put the stupid-ass fork down. I call my sponsor, read the big book, read the OA 12 and 12, give service, pray like hell, you know, all that other stuff. That's what I do. That's what I've done for all of these years. And I wish to talk about the importance of service. So many of us, I really believe when we come in, we just have such low self-esteem. And service is one of those things where it helps to build that self-esteem by carrying the literature and the coffee pot. I was able to be of service to my fellow members. And then as we progress along, we're able to do stuff and be at the intergroup level, be a intergroup representative. And then as we go on, be at the region level and be a trustee, a regional rep or region officer, or even go to World Service, be a World Service Business Conference delegate, or even a trustee. And yet at the same time, all it is just giving back to one another. One of the things that I've learned about this program is, I always love to say, I don't sponsor. You have to realize I don't sponsor. Because I've seen enough sponsor abuse in this program that it drives me crazy. This is what I tell folks. I do what the 7th chapter of the big book of Alcoholics talks about. It does not say bossing others. It does not say telling others what to do. It does not say controlling others. It says working with others. So when somebody asked me to, quote, sponsor them, I say, I don't sponsor, but I'll work with you. And this is what we will do. And we go through the OA 12 and 12 together. We go through the workbook together, OA 12 and 12 workbook together. I do a 4-step inventory with them. I do all of this stuff. Because It says we just share our strength, hope, and experience. I might not have some of the best strength, hope, and experience, but at the same time, I've got something. And it might be something that somebody just needs to hear, like, what can I do to help? You know, one of the things that I remember years ago, relapse was such a dirty word, and people in relapse, it's kind of like relapse is not contagious, folks. It's not. I have a responsibility to those who are suffering relapse, because I need to say, what can I do to help? What can I do to help? Is there something I can do? Because people have done that for me. One of the things that I also find is that after all of these years of being in program, I'm still teachable. I'm still teachable. I'm finding out more stuff sometimes than I care to find out. It's kind of like, So, you know, everybody thinks that spiritual awakenings are supposed to be rainbows, puppy dogs, kitty cats, and unicorns. Well, some of my most memorable and growth-filled spiritual awakenings have been the most painful. And here are a couple of them. At my parish, we have what they call Loaves and Fishes Sunday, where we bring food in and all this other stuff. And I did not have much money at the time, and I had saved up my money, and I got all this food to take for Loaves and Fishes Sunday. This homeless person comes up to me and says, do you have any food to share? Now, mind you, I've got two grocery bags of food, and I said, no, and walk into the church because of my pride. I wanted to give them, I wanted to make sure that the food bank got everything that was listed on that list. Has that haunted my butt for years? So now I make sure that if they ask, in fact, I've said one time, let's go in, what can I get you for food? You know, I got that. The other most painful spiritual experience I had was about 13 years ago. I was out running, and at my home meeting, there was a couple, some men, and some compulsive overeaters are more bossy than others, and says, you should work with those guys. And it's just kind of like, they've got mouths, they can ask me. They didn't say anything. The guys didn't say anything. So one day I was out running, and God said, work with those guys. And I said, no. And I ran a little further, and God said, work with those guys. And I said, hell no. And I ran a little further. All of this is in the same run. And God said, work with these guys. You're getting the sanitized version of this, what I said next. God said, work with these guys. I said, no, I'm not going to work with those bleeping evangelical straight men. Which all of a sudden I had the most painful spiritual awakening I'd ever had, because these gentlemen had never shown me anything but kindness, courtesy, and respect. And I was the one who was judging them. It wasn't the other way around. So I said, okay, God, such a deal I got for you. This is what we'll do. I'll tell him we'll do this, this, and this. And when they say no, I have done my due diligence. Well, I just want you all to know that in our little men's study group, that is not a registered meeting because we allow crosstalk and all this other stuff, we'll be meeting our 13th anniversary will be coming up in January, because every week we read out of the 12 and 12. We read the big book. We read the AA 12 and 12 and all. And I just want to let you know that it works, folks. This works. So what can I do for you? I mean, if you're hurting, what can I do to help you? Because you've always been there to help me. You've always been there to help me. And I'm most grateful. One of my most favorite church services isn't at Christmas or Easter. It's Thanksgiving Day. Because the people who are attending the religious services are those people who want to be there, not because they have to be there, because it's that big that big time of the year. And I always kind of get a little teary because I'm so grateful. I'm grateful that I'm still alive. I'm grateful that I've had the experiences that I've had in life. I'm grateful for this wonderful. I'm not retired yet. I'm not ready to retire. I love my job. I have more damn fun. And I've been at it now for 15 years. And it's just one of those things that I just go, thank you for giving me this opportunity. See, every morning before I get up and go pee, I get on my knees and I say the following prayer out loud. Dear God, please help me with the food. Please help me with my abstinence. Please remove from me the uncontrollable desire to eat compulsively. Please help me with my attitude. Please help me to be of service to others today. And then I can go to the bathroom. And then on the way to work, I don't listen to the radio. I say the serenity prayer, the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, and some other prayers that are meaningful to me. And then I pray a lot during the day. Just, dear God, please help me to keep my sanity. Please help me not to just to live in your will. The other part of it is, there have been some people at work who have been so good for my prayer life because they are just exactly what I found out that I can be. Just a big, big pain in the butt. But here's what I also found out, folks. Do you want relief or do you want recovery? Relief, we can find a great deal of relief in this room, in these rooms, on Zoom or wherever we can find the relief. But the recovery demands of me to be willing, able, and have the fortitude to put the food down, not to eat my binge foods, to be willing to be emotionally vulnerable, which is one of my biggest, scariest attributes, and to be spiritually awakened on a daily basis. We all have an opportunity to get this on a daily basis, and I'm just so grateful. You know, I've been in this program now for 67% of my life, and over 62% of my life has been abstinent. And I just am grateful for that, just so grateful. Because each day, once again, I had that grace, graciously and gratefully receiving abstinence from compulsive overeating, from compulsive eating. And that's what each of us have. And you know, I'm going to stop with that because I just want you to know that you too can have this wonderful, wonderful, magnificent gift. But don't leave. Don't leave, don't leave, don't leave. I did a Zoom workshop last weekend, and this woman had come back after being gone for 30 years. And I listen very carefully to people who left the rooms and come back and find out that it's even worse going back out after you've had the taste of abstinence and serenity. And I don't ever want to go back and do that. So, Joe, thank you so much for asking me to do this for you. And just for more fun, Joe and I used to room together when we were region reps and trustees and stuff because, you know, it was so much fun. Did find out that I snored, so now I just kind of sleep by myself. So anyway, thanks so much, folks.